KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City.
Glenmore in Fremont.
East Bay, El Cerrito.
West Oakland.
Richmond, California.
I live in Oakland, California. How you doing?
Coming up, we meet a young man who's helping his Mayan community speak their truth in Bay Area courts.
Some people are waiting years to get a case to be settled, and the only reason why they wait so long is because there's no one to interpret.
The mom interpreter. Then we'll hear the story of a 5-year-old mom-speaking child separated from his mother at the border and now living without her in San Mateo County.
This is a really small child who has pretty much traveled through 4 states by himself since December.
The effects of immigration policy in the Bay Area, today on Cross Currents. It's not just protesters who've been rushing to the southern U.S. border in the last few weeks. There's been a call for indigenous language interpreters, too. That's because there are a lot of Central Americans seeking asylum who don't speak any Spanish. More than 6 million people across Guatemala, Mexico, Belize, and Honduras, including diaspora communities here in the Bay Area, speak one of 30 different Mayan languages. Today, East Oakland is home to several thousand speakers of MAM, that's a Mayan language indigenous to Guatemala. For migrants who don't speak Spanish, there's a language barrier when trying to access social services. So many rely on interpreters to communicate with teachers, doctors, and lawyers. KALW's Marisol Medina Cadena brings us the story of one Mayan language interpreter who's part of a new generation of homegrown Oaklanders working to give their communities a voice in their native tongue.
In case you don't understand what's being said, you might be feeling language exclusion, what some Mayan speakers face when they arrive here in the U.S. And that language you just heard is MAM, one of the 22 officially recognized Mayan languages in Guatemala, spoken by Oswaldo Martin and his grandmother.
My name is Oswaldo Martin. Yo vivo aquí en el área de Fruitvale de Oakland, bish nchishnatsangwe ingeniería, bish lqewincha anang te intérprete.
Oswaldo is constantly switching between English, Spanish, and his first language, MAM. When in school, he speaks English. In the neighborhood, Spanish. And in his home, MAM.
Let me check on here. So this is my grandma.
Nice to meet you.
Beach, Marisol.
Uh-huh. Oswaldo's grandmother speaks MAM and very little Spanish, but the two languages sound nothing alike. So Oswaldo interprets for me and her. Dressed in a traditional purple huipil and a long black skirt called a corte, she shows me photos of their family in Guatemala.
Is that you in that photo?
Andres.
That's Alicia.
Me.
Gerardo.
Oh, Javier. No, that's my cousin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Over the years, she's had to rely on Oswaldo to interpret for some of her doctor visits and translate mail that's sent to her in Spanish.
No, they're 18.
Is that when you were married?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Those are beautiful.
But Oswaldo doesn't just translate for his family. For the last 3 years, he's been working as an interpreter, helping attorneys communicate with MAM speakers.
Before I got into doing it, I didn't really think too much about it. I just thought, you know, they're going to talk to the lawyer, they're going to sign some paperwork.
At the age of 4, Oswaldo and his mother left his hometown in Todos Santos, Guatemala, and settled in East Oakland. Eventually, his family was granted asylum status. And since he spent most of his life here, he didn't know the harsh realities that his community faced back home. Nor did he know the details of Guatemala's brutal 36-year civil war, since many survivors don't talk about it. But that changed when he got hired by a Berkeley law firm to help attorneys work with asylum seekers.
And listening to their stories, I started to realize all of the things that were happening to our community, from gang violence, domestic violence, discrimination.
What started off as just a job to pay his way through community college became much more personal for Oswaldo. He wants to help mom speakers tell their story in their own language so that they have a fair chance at winning their cases. He says it's important that mom is given respect in the courts and at large.
We want it to be known and to also be treated on the same level as any other language would.
That's why he makes it a point to
correct people and tell people it's not a dialect, it's its own language, and it's completely separate from Spanish.
Before local courts understood the distinction between Mayan languages and Spanish, they would sometimes assign Spanish language interpreters for mum speakers, which of course was useless. But awareness has grown. In 2016, the Department of Justice reported that mum was one of the top 10 languages used in immigration court. Over the past 3 years, the Alameda County Superior Court, which deals with civil, criminal, and traffic law, has also been getting increasingly frequent requests for mom interpreters. Finding people with those skills hasn't been so easy, though.
We need more indigenous interpreters, and not just interpreters that can do mom and Spanish.
When courts need to make do with a shortage of trained interpreters, they often hire a mom speaker to do Spanish, and then a second person to relay Spanish into English. But doing it this way with two different people and three different languages is a game of telephone, where words can get lost in translation.
The most valuable ones at the moment are the ones that can do mom straight to English.
Interpreters like Oswaldo, but until recently, there weren't many available.
Some people are waiting years to get a case to be settled, and the only reason why they wait so long is because there's no one to interpret.
But Oswaldo and other English-speaking mom millennials who migrated to the U.S. as children now have come of age. They're bridging this language gap. At the office of a local nonprofit called Asociación Mayab, bilingual Mayan speakers are gathered to learn how to be court interpreters. Although Oswaldo is already trained to work in the courts, he attends the weekly class to practice his skills and meet other interpreters. And not all speak Mum. They speak other Mayan languages, like Quiche, Setal, and Yucateco. The class is taught in Spanish so that everyone can learn.
Okay, entonces dice que el intérprete tiene que ser imparcial y objetivo y no puede tener prejuicios en contra de alguna religión, política, etnia, sexo.
That's Naomi Adelson. She's been leading this course for the last 10 years. All her students are migrants, just like their clients. Besides teaching them how to ethically and responsibly interpret in the court, she gives them a crash course on legal terminology. Because in any language, the law is really complex, like breaking down what arraignment means.
Reading charges to them in
Mm-hmm.
Reading accusations.
Reading instructions. That's the idea that we came up with.
Okay, no. Because what you're reading there is the charges.
The charges.
I'm telling you, what am I accusing you of?
Mm-hmm.
It takes years to master interpreting skills. So many of Naomi's students keep returning to her class even after completing the training. They also come back because they feel it's a safe space to discuss the emotional struggles they experience on the job.
La experiencia es similar. Exactly. Es similar. Lo que dijo, yo lo viví. Y lo que la está sufriendo, yo lo sufrí.
That's one interpreter recalling a time he relived his own trauma while interpreting for a young boy. He didn't specify the details of the testimony because interpreters are sworn to an oath of confidentiality. And since the Mayan community in the Bay Area is so tight-knit, interpreters don't want to out anyone's story. Coping with the emotional intensity is just one of many challenges Oswaldo and his peers face. Oswaldo has learned how to swallow his feelings of frustration when his clients don't win their requests for asylum.
You know, sometimes cases just come down to a single word or a single phrase. And sometimes I just want to, like, yell out, like, what the officer wants to hear, what would make the convince the officer to help the person out.
But he doesn't. If his client's testimony of why they are fleeing their home doesn't fit what the law considers as credible fear and thus worthy of protection, Oswaldo says he can't do anything about it. He's simply the bridge between two languages.
Remain seated. Come to order. Apartment 16 is now in session. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Benjamin Reyes. I'm one of the judges of the Superior Court. I'll be calling your cases in order.
On a Tuesday afternoon, Oswaldo is working a job for the Superior Court of Richmond. He's dressed up in a button-down shirt and a sleek black tie. Over that, he wears a striped camisa, a shirt traditional to his hometown of Todos Santos. It has a large collar and cuffs, which are colorfully embroidered with blue, yellow, and green flowers, making him stand out. And that's his goal. He says he wants his indigenous culture to be seen.
Okay, with the interpreters, please state your appearance, and our court clerk will have to swear you both in. Mr. Martin, please raise your right hand to be sworn.
Do you solemnly swear that you will make a true interpretation of English into Mam and Mam into English?
When he showed up, Oswaldo had no idea what kind of hearing this would be or who he's interpreting for. That's usually the case. And it means he has to be prepared for everything. Today, he is interpreting for a man charged with murder.
So we're here on further arraignment.
Since his client is in custody for murder charges, he can only communicate through the small openings in the wall between the courtroom and its holding cell. Think the space between prison bars, but smaller. This makes it very hard for both of them to hear each other. And the job requires major multitasking. Oswaldo has to listen to what the judges say in English, remember it, and relay it back in Mam, all in real time.
Do you understand and waive your 10-day right, sir?
Yes.
Ms. Eisenhardt, do you concur?
I didn't hear the interpreter. What was the answer, Mr. Interpreter?
He said C.
I'm sorry?
C. Yes.
Thank you.
The trial ends, and Oswaldo looks tired. But his work isn't done. Outside the courthouse, he finds the other Mam interpreter on the trial to ask how she said the phrase, waive your rights, in Mam. He's doing research for a manual he's creating in order to standardize the language Mam interpreters are using in the courts.
One of my projects is to get a consensus of you know, important words that come up in interpreting.
The manual is a big undertaking, since there are no direct translations in Mam for legal terminology. He says it's challenging, since Mam is a language full of idioms, many of which are based on agriculture or anatomy.
And sometimes it means bringing back old words, words that our grandparents may have used, bringing them back into the language and giving them a new context.
A legal context. So on Saturdays, he and a small group of interpreters stay after class at Asociacion Mayab to come up with Mam equivalencies for legal jargon, like bond. Naomi helps them too.
And then we were saying about the fianza, bond, so payment for you being held.
Oh, no, that's not the meaning. So the bond is this. It's a payment to get out of jail and guarantee that you will come back.
I think that's the part we missed on, the guarantee of coming back.
Exactly. So you got to add that.
He's taking on this ambitious project to empower other bilingual Mam speakers to become interpreters and inform government agencies how to better serve Mam refugees.
Part of it, too, is being recognized that there's a community here that's separate from the bigger Latino, Latin American culture.
Just 22 years old, he's doing all this while pursuing a civil engineering degree, helping his family's construction business, and working on his own music projects. Oswaldo says all these endeavors are about uplifting his community right here in Oakland.
There's so many Mam people here. You see them walking all down Fruitvale. You know, you can't take a step without seeing one.
He tells me that back in Guatemala, people call different neighborhoods aldeas. So Oswaldo affectionately calls his adoptive home in Fruitvale,
Aldea Fruitvale,
a tight-knit community where Maya migrants are each other's greatest advocates. In Aldea Fruitvale, I'm Marisol Medina Cadena for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In Interpreters of the MOM language are called on not just to help adult immigrants, but children too. As the nation has been following for weeks now, thousands of undocumented minors coming to the U.S. through the southern border are separated from their families. Many of these kids end up shuffled from shelters to foster homes, and some end up with extended family here in the U.S. That is the story of Jorgito. He's a 5-year-old Guatemalan boy who now lives in San Mateo County with family, but his journey was a harrowing one. San Francisco Chronicle reporter Karen DeSa told his story in a Sunday article entitled Jorgito's Journey. I called her up to tell me about Jorgito.
You go into these fraught situations where you really want the world to know about someone like Jorgito, but for instance, when myself and my partner in the story, Gabrielle Lurie, who's a photographer, when we got there, like, Jorgito was really afraid of us. You know, like, he was, like, laying on the floor kind of writhing. We brought him a little yogurt drink, but it hurt his tummy, and I was like, oh, no, you know, what's happening? You know, why is he holding his tummy and kind of writhing around on the floor? I felt really bad. And I asked later, you know, like, is it the yogurt? Is it something related to having maybe eaten too fast? And they told me, no, you know, when strangers come, he either runs and hides in the bedroom or he holds his tummy. And that was something that, because we ended up spending a whole 12-hour day with this family, when we went to the clinic to have his stomach aches checked out, the physician said he actually doesn't have anything physically wrong, but the way that his kind of traumatic separation from his mom is manifesting itself is in pain in his stomach.
Mm-hmm. So he was separated from his mother, who was deported back to Guatemala, and he's staying with his caregiver, the mother's cousin, Margarita. And so you went and spent this day with them. Can you tell me more about just, like, Jorgito and what he's like?
Yeah, you know, he went through a lot of changes. You know, I have 4 kids myself. I have grandchildren. I have a grandchild pretty much Jorgito's age. And so the main thing that struck me, to be honest, was, like, how wonderfully behaved he was. Like, he was such a little trooper. You know, this is a really small child who has pretty much traveled through 4 states by himself since December. I mean, he went to a shelter in Texas. He went to 1, 2, or possibly as many as 3 foster homes in Texas before going to another cousin in Georgia. That cousin then got deported, and then he has come to California. These are all strangers and new people he's been meeting with. But in this day I spent with him, he was perky, and he was funny, and he was silly. You know, he got a little bit cranky part of the day, and he was, you know, shooting me with his finger and acting out these scenes with the police. But then he was goofy, and he was jumping on the bed. But what struck me really was, like, literally he did not cry once. And Margarita says he never, ever cries during the day. What he does is cry it out at night when he's asleep. And she thinks that that's when he's really feeling the pain of the separation. But I guess the last thing that struck me was he literally walked an hour in the pretty hot sun to the doctor's appointment and an hour back with not a complaint at all.
So you explained kind of the path that he took and all of it alone. Can you further explain that? Like, once the mother was deported, what happened to him? Because I think a lot of people just now are kind of coming to this consciousness about what happens to children at the border. And so what happened to him right then? And then what? And then what? If you could just tell that story.
What I was able to piece together was that he arrived at the Arizona border with his mother. His young mother. And within 3 days, she was jailed for repeated attempts to enter the country illegally. And he They came for Jorgito at 5:30 in the morning and removed him from her. He went then to Texas. So 3 days after being stamped in at the border as an illegal, quote unquote, alien, he's in a shelter in Texas. And then weeks later, he goes to the succession of foster homes. Then the relative caregiver in yet another state, and then another plane with another stranger to another family home. Luckily, this is a family home where I think he's found some peace. They have two other children. As I said, there's a very, very loving caregiver. She's really remarkable. She's so tender with him. You know, she's hand making the tortillas for him, and she's sheltering his head from the sun, and they pray together for his mommy, and she's very, very loving. But yet this trauma of the last 6 months for this kid, it's really difficult to foresee what's ahead. And certainly at least the physician that she saw with him last week said he is definitely in need of some therapy.
Hmm. Let's talk about that. You did speak to people in the mental health field. What are they saying about what these children might be going through?
They're terrified. They're horrified. I think that the psychologists and child psychiatrists and people who are really familiar with the way that childhood trauma plays out over a lifetime are really, really concerned about what these separations are going to do to these children. And that's even in the best of circumstances where they have kind of age-appropriate, culturally appropriate, language-sensitive, you know, therapeutic services, clinical services, but even more than that, stability in their lives. And for these kids that are separated from their parents with no clear path to reunification and to finding each other again, like Jorgito, that uncertainty is another factor of making it difficult to even start the healing process.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a sense of what the plan is right now? The mother is in contact with them, right? They have these FaceTime phone calls, but he's very much here and she's very much there. Did you get any sense of what's next for them and for Jorgito?
So the attorney representing Jorgito is still figuring out what legal remedy she will pursue for him. It's very difficult because the mother returned to their region of Guatemala where she fled because it was unsafe. So she's back there now and nothing has changed. It's still unsafe. She still can't provide for him. So kind of ushering him back there doesn't appear to be the best option for him right now. And he has potentially to deal with deportation proceedings. He is fortunate in that he does have an attorney, and kids who are represented by an attorney do appear to have better outcomes. So right now, his attorney is trying to pursue a guardianship with the current family. Mm-hmm. So that would help kind of his legal situation, but it wouldn't necessarily help the emotional difficulty of being separated from his mom, and it wouldn't necessarily help the economic circumstances or the vulnerability of this family because some of their family members, not all, are undocumented.
Right. So the whole nation is talking about this. Lots of people are you know, concerned. And so I wanted to know if there was like just one or two main things that you wanted people to really, really understand about the situation through the story of Jorgito, what would that be? What do you want people to really just get?
I think that today, as I've been working on a follow-up story, which we're set to publish, which is all the people, the dozens of people who have come forward and literally minutes after reading the story, were contacting me and the the San Mateo County Legal Aid Society about wanting to donate is that we are living in a time that none of us will forget, kind of historically, akin to the internment of the Japanese. Many people say akin to what went on in Nazi Germany. Everyone's making these historic connections and saying, are we living through something of those types of epic proportions again? And when I look back at that time, what did I do? And I think a lot of people are reflecting on, what will I be able to say years from now about how I acted when I became aware of circumstances like Jorgito in my community, not far away in Texas or Arizona or New York, but literally in my town. What did I do? And I think that's moving a lot of people.
That's San Francisco Chronicle reporter Karen DeSa. She wrote the article, Jorgito's Journey. We'll link to it at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Mary Franklin Harvin, Sarah Harrison, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, and Priscilla Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.